What's up, guys? Here we are. How's it going? We are at the, what is it today? February 27th. Coming at you on a Wednesday. It's about 9:40 p.m. right now. So I'm not coming to you live as per usual, doing a little bit of pre-recording. So here we are again, like I said, Wednesday, February 27th. Episode 20 freaking 2. Pretty wild. Doing this every week for 22 weeks, but just under halfway through the year, which is interesting. But again, episode 22, here we are. Want to preface this before I get into my 10 cents. This is not a political episode whatsoever. I do mention Donald Trump and I do mention the United States Congress, but this is not a political episode whatsoever in any way, shape, or form. Just bear with me on that. So, first things first. Oops, sorry. Stupid thing. Making sure it's recording. Perfect. And alrighty. So, my first 10 cents for thought here. Today, am I a little better than I was yesterday? You know, I can't really call it today. I'm not really sure. I was a little better today than yesterday. I got to work on time, like actually early. I got to work early for the first time in quite a long time, many months. Usually I walk in, you know, right on time, you know, punch in 8:30 on the dot, maybe a minute or two after, maybe 10 minutes after, whatever the case may be, but I was legitimately early today for work. So that actually felt pretty good. And I just, because I didn't dilly-dally and I didn't hit snooze 40 times this morning, so that was good. And I think that as far as building my character, I think not hitting snooze 40 times this morning, that was a really good exercise. That was a refreshing little piece that I... You know, I don't know. Usually I do actually hit snooze like 6 or 7 times. So it was good not to do that this morning. I just got right out of bed. When my first alarm went off, I had my first alarm set for like 6:17 or something this morning, and I got right out of bed, did some shit beforehand, got my food together for the day and all that jazz. So started my day off on a really good foot this morning. And I actually did quite a bit of work today. I got a lot more done and felt a lot more productive and a lot more at home, quote unquote, at home in my office today. So I actually did kind of put my best foot forward. I hadn't necessarily been doing that as frequently as I should have been lately, mostly because my job's just kind of boring the shit out of me recently. Something that I learned new today. What I learned new today, I'm not really sure. Yeah, I don't really think I learned anything new today, which is kind of upsetting. I haven't been reading extracurricular books recently, at least not enough to actually kind of digest things. I've just been kind of reading the Daily Stoic, so I do need to kind of get back into that. I have only read about 3 pages of 12 Rules for Life. Haven't read too much on Fooled for Randomness lately, which is a book that I started during the summer, and I just haven't been getting around to that. So unfortunately for me today, I didn't really learn anything new, which is not, at least nothing significant enough to actually bring up. Hold on 1 second, I'm gonna text the lady.
I did learn something new today, actually.
A friend of mine at work actually shared with me, like, some cool new low-carb tortilla that he eats, because he's on a low-carb diet, like myself. So he basically just told me the brand that I need to go buy, and they're, like, super low glycemic index flour tortillas, like whole grain, whole wheat, whatever you want to call it. They're very low glycemic index, so it's not necessarily going to be contradictory with the rest of my diet.
So that's good. Question 5, have I made healthier choices? Yeah. Yeah, I worked out today. I'm still doing my same regimen that I've been doing this for probably about a week. Just kind of as like in sort of an active rest day. I've cut my workout down from about an hour and a half, including my warm up, to just about an hour on the dot, at least for the next couple weeks. So I spend the first about 25 minutes. I run a stretch. Okay, so first 30 minutes, instead of just basically running a little bit and then jumping into the weights, I'm not really doing any weight training at all. So that's good because I'm kind of being healthy to my joints, being good to my joints, doing a lot more stretching, things like that. And also, so I've upped my mileage per day that I'm running to 2.5 miles. So that's fun. And I'm not putting as much stress on my joints as of the next couple weeks with like heavy weights, squat, deadlift, bench press, shit like that. As far as protecting my planet goes, have I protected my planet? Yeah, whatever. Just trying not to be a piece of shit, recycling, throwing stuff out, you know, not wasting any food, but I'm not a vegan, so, you know, turn all the lights off and all that good jazz every day. You know, it's something I've kind of ingrained in myself. Question 7, have I expressed my love for my family and friends? Sure, for sure. My brother's birthday's coming up, so I'm trying to plan stuff for him. Andy, I know you're listening to this, or you will at some point, so sorry, kid, not telling you what I'm doing for your birthday. But we'll do something. And then I talked to my dad earlier today, too. Question 8, have I spent quality time with my spouse? Yeah, we've been pretty much spending every weekend together for the last, say, month or so. And I'll be seeing her again this weekend when she gets back from Philadelphia, so that's good. Do I bear any grudges against anyone is my 9th food for thought here. We got a nickel and 4 pennies. Nope, not really. I don't really have any interest in such things. I'm scatterbrained enough as it is. I don't have time to dedicate enough of my consciousness to someone else to actually continue to hold a grudge. I'm not saying that to kind of, you know, be on my high horse. I just literally don't care enough about other people's shit to hold a grudge. And last but not least, favorite, but also least favorite, am I content with my life? And it every week it seems to kind of move in that direction, but still not quite. Sorry, hold on a second. I have a text message. Get rid of that. Content with my life. Nope, still have goals. A new goal that I set for myself that I'm going to be working on is to use my phone less. I feel like that would allow me to be more present and happier with the direction my life is going, because even making incremental progress should be something to celebrate, but I don't think that people in general, especially myself, necessarily celebrate that incremental progress because you're too wrapped up in other things. I think it would be a lot easier to be content and happy with the way that your life is going and what you're actually doing if you weren't looking at your damn phone so much. So there we have it. Glad I got back to starting with that, my 10 cents for thought. And so this week, this is actually a pretty cool week. We're going to have 2 months in this week again. We got the last day of February tomorrow, the 28th, and then Friday is March 1st, which is really cool. It's been a pretty decent month at work here for me, but I'm actually really excited for the end of February and the beginning of March. On Friday at work, we're doing something pretty cool, something that some folks actually ended up putting together. We have a community. Excuse me. Ugh. Jeez. We have a community and employee engagement committee that basically anybody who wants to try to plan events to keep everybody engaged with each other and keep people active in the community through their work. you know, we all kind of meet every once in a while, usually once, sometimes twice a week, and think of different events and different themes for those events and stuff like that. I'm the vice president of that committee, whoop-dee-doo. And so a couple of our folks that are on the committee actually are setting up a Black History Month celebration on Friday the 1st, which I think is pretty cool. At work and everything. And so what they're actually going to do, they're going to get a local Black business owner. I forget what the gentleman's name is, but he owns a cafe. I think it's called Arnett Cafe here in Rochester. And so we're going to have catered lunch. He's going to be bringing, it's going to be catered soul food. And then we're also going to have a potluck aspect. So anything that we want to make, you know, different pies, vegetables, food, like meals and desserts and all this other stuff. A whole bunch of people are going to be contributing to the potluck. I'm going to have to go probably just pick something up from the store because I don't have time to cook because I'm lazy. And but we're also going to have a local dance instructor named Prince, oddly enough, who's going to be teaching and demonstrating hip-hop and traditional African dances, kind of as a celebration of the culture, which I think is really cool. I feel like most workplaces just kind of don't really do anything to, A, keep each other engaged and keep a sense of community, like foster that family atmosphere in the workplace. I feel like most places don't necessarily do that, at least this is the only place I've ever worked that did that effectively. And so that's A, and then B, not to mention, you know, it is Black History Month. Like, people celebrate Black History Month, and this is a time to revere the culture of African Americans and just Africa in general and the contributions that have been made, which don't necessarily get acknowledged all year round or throughout the course of history. But I think it's just really cool that these folks came up with the idea to have a formal celebration, and it's gonna, you know, it's gonna just double down as a piece to keep us all kind of engaged in that family atmosphere in the office, which is cool. So that will be on Friday. Today in the office, however, I know I said I did get a lot done, but kind of the buzz around the office today was that Michael Cohen hearing with the House Oversight and Reforms Committee. So, like, even when I wasn't actually doing work, they installed some new flat screens up on the wall today, like three or four of them in different places. And of course, all day on those TVs, the news is running. Michael Cohen's dumb, stupid face is up there. He just looks dumb. I'm sorry. I find it hard to believe that guy's legitimately a lawyer. I know he's been disbarred, but still, I find it hard to believe that guy was ever a lawyer. He just looks like a moron, and he acts like a moron. So I watched about 20 minutes of the live feed of that, and I gotta be honest with you. I got really bored when the representative from West Virginia started, like, fake crying throughout her little rant on how Michael Cohen's presence in front of this committee is political theatrics at its finest, and he's a liar, and blah, blah, which he is. I mean, he's a convicted liar, and I just kind of thought it was really funny that literally today's proceedings can be summed up in one sentence. A convicted liar testifying under oath that he's telling the truth about all the lies he's told. So, I mean, today was just kind of like a day full of contradictions. I spent 20-30 minutes actually watching this crap, which is, it really is just crap. It really is political fear, but not just on the side of Michael Cohen, on the side of the Democrat and the Republican representatives on the Oversight and Reforms Committee. Because, like I said, when that lady just started, like, fake crying and her upper lip was quivering and she was, like, whimpering throughout it and pretending to be so indignant over his presence in front of them, I mean, it's really just crap. It was truly crap. And she's a Republican, so, you know, she's criticizing Cohen. And then on the other side of the aisle, you got the Democrats that are praising him. And, you know, they're praising him for his honesty and how it's so smart and good of him to come through and come forward and finally actually, you know, finally actually t- tell the truth about what he's done, even though he's been convicted in front of, for lying in front of Congress. So you got them praising him just because it serves their narrative, and then you've got the Republicans, who were his best friend, just like Trump was throughout the entirety of his proceedings the first time around, where he was lying and saying Trump didn't do anything. Now they're just trying to destroy him and discredit him because it serves their narrative, which is you were wrong about our president. So whatever. You got hypocrites on both sides. They're both engaging in their own political theatrics, and all the while Michael Cohen's getting dragged through the mud, when personally I don't know how you feel, person, or people who are listening to this, I should say you individually, though, you, the person I'm talking to, you, I don't know how you feel personally, but I feel bad for Michael Cohen because he definitely seems a little more genuine this time around than he definitely than he did in the first set of proceedings. But by the same token, his lies are the reason that he's actually in the situation, and I guess kind of letting him off the hook just because he lets out a few whimpers and makes like a weird congenial joke every now and again doesn't really make any sense. So even though I feel bad for him, and I think some of the senators here in that limited time that I saw were starting to kind of like feel bad for him too, just to let him get off without kind of letting him know that they think he's a piece of shit would be like letting your kid get away with anything they want because they make you like a macaroni apology card at kindergarten every time they fuck something up. You got your little kid pulling his sister's hair, you got your daughter calling her older brother fat, whatever the case may be. You can't just let your kids off without actually kind of letting them know what they've done is wrong and letting them know that you're not just going to give in so easily. And so, all that being said, I do kind of feel bad for the guy. There's so many freaking people out there that are just super passionate about shit that they normally would, like, just let it go. Like, any other person that's convicted of lying or held in contempt of court or gets a perjury charge or whatever, like, you never hear from that person again. Even if it's like a televised trial, you literally never hear from that person ever again. And so there's I feel like the whole last 2 to 3 years has just been like, there's just been such a crazy increase in the veracity with which politicians are going at each other's throats. Like, that's always kind of been the case, at least the last like 5 to 7 years that I've actually been politically aware, like since I could vote. But I feel like the last 2 to 3 years, it's been like a shitty reality show. It's been like a reality show has been created out of not just the US presidency, but our political process as a whole. And both of those things, the presidency and the political process, have kind of been like created into main characters or different storylines on like a season of Big Brother or something. It's craziness. And I think it's all being fueled by people's inability to just let stuff go. It's all kind of being fueled by the not just the willingness, but the crazy desire and like the innate need to say, gotcha, I got you, you idiot, you're wrong, and this is why you're wrong, and I'm way smarter than you and cooler, and my party's better than yours, and all this other crap. And I think that's pretty indicative of just the national attitude, just like the way that people talk to each other in general. Like, that's not just a political thing anymore. Granted, I mean, it's more relevant to the political sphere, and it's definitely more it's more prominent in the political sphere just because that shit's televised and written about constantly, and there's just a higher degree of awareness of the behavior of politicians, at least the public behavior of politicians, than there is of just your average schmo on the street. Like, for instance, you're never gonna really necessarily hear from that guy on the street ever again who, like, I don't know, cut you off while you were walking into a store or something. You're never going to hear from that guy again. You might curse him out and tell him to screw off, but you're never going to hear from that guy again. Whereas you got a politician that does something messed up. They do what Cohen did. You lie to Congress, or you get convicted of something. You got, like, they, you know, turns out they're a scumbag and they're, like, sexually assaulting people. That stuff's televised. It's everywhere. It's all over the nation, and in some cases, it's all over the world, especially with the president. You kind of can't get away from that, and so I feel like we're kind of creating this self-fulfilling prophecy of everyone being at their throats, or everyone being at each other's throats, because not only are we broadcasting the good, like, the, you know, the good juicy stories about these people, but we're broadcasting the reactions to those stories, you know. And I'll give you a little bit of an example here. So today, obviously, like I said, I watched 20, maybe 30 minutes of the Michael Cohen trial, and I was watching it on CNN just because I Googled Michael Cohen hearing live, and CNN was the first link that came up. So this was my first time watching CNN since the New York gubernatorial election, and just, I was really distracted by all the stuff on the ticker that was going on by the bottom, and all the different pop-up windows and the little ads all over this page while I was trying to watch the hearing, and I feel like I got cancer all over again from just these little blurbs, and knowing, like, some of the stuff on there, I know that I could have flipped over to Fox News and heard the completely opposite side of the same story with a completely different spin on it. That's how it's always been, I feel like. But it's like everybody's just looking for the next way to look superior, like, in real time. Like, it's all these news, the way these news websites and these publications actually cover real life current events is astonishing to me, because I don't really understand how they keep the intensity so frequently. Like, personally, as a citizen and as a human being, I have way more important shit to worry about than, like, I don't know, man. That's been a frustration point for me all day. I have way more important shit to worry about than who said who was right and wrong, and who called who a racist, and who said who's a liberal and a Democrat. Like, I don't. That stuff is everywhere, and that's all you're ever gonna see if you turn your television on during the day. And the different slants that get put on the exact same news, I feel like they're all just an attempted power grab, and an attempt to kind of let loose some inner passion that these people all really need. A, they need it to keep their jobs, but B, I think these pundits and these reporters and journalists and TV personalities, and I think they're all, like I said earlier, they're creating this self-fulfilling prophecy where everybody is at everybody else's throat all the time. I forget the exact quote, and I'm gonna botch the shit out of this, but kind of like a Hobbesian reality, I'm gonna completely botch this, but Thomas Hobbes viewed the world as, like, every human being is in their own little foxhole, and everyone's shooting at you all the time, and you need to shoot at everyone else all the time, and that's the only way to survive through in life, is to not get shot while you're in your foxhole and shoot everyone else. Something along those lines, and again, like I said, I completely botched that, but I feel like that's a really chaotic and unfortunate and cynical way to look at life. That being said, I guess you could just duck down in your foxhole and just, like, have a cigarette every once in a while without getting shot, but you know, for these people in the political circles, there are no lulls in the shooting. There's just constant back and forth and back and forth, and I think for me, that's really kind of making me disengaged with something that I've truly been enamored with since I could literally vote and was old enough to legitimately give a shit about politics. That's something that's been really, that's what I studied in college, for Christ's sake, was political science, political philosophy, political theory, law and justice, constitutional law, all that kind of shit. That was my major. And I was super active in, well, my internship I did through the New York Public Interest Research Group in college, and I was constantly on, like, organizing campus events, fundraisers, creating shit, writing, like, articles or blog posts and pushing them out, like, sending out emails, canvassing, doing, like, sign-up sheets and clipboarding and all this other stuff. Went to, like, lobby days at the New York State Legislature. Excuse me. Lobby days at the New York State Legislature and all these other things. Super engaged, super involved in the political process. And then, what do you know it? I graduate college 7 or 8 months later. Political turmoil. We get the presidential, actually it was like 5 months later, we get the presidential election, and then over the last 2 to 3 years, slowly, these fuckers have just completely sucked the joy out of the political process for me. And I don't really know what else to do about it, guys. I'm kind of at a crossroads here, because that's something that I love, and I loved, and have loved, and hopefully we'll be able to continue to love or find a way to regain that love and that trust in the political process and those involved. But I guess, you know, if this is how things are going to progress, then I'm just going to have to find some kind of alternative outlet to let my, because I mean, the underlying elements of politics and the political process is actual political philosophy, which is something that I find incredibly interesting. And I haven't lost any kind of a love or the attention span to digest that. Not at all. Quite the contrary, actually. It's much more comforting to read about the underlying philosophies of why people act the way they do politically than it is to examine why what people are doing politically. But I don't know. I'm just kind of wondering whether that time is gone where I can afford my mental state to be so engaged in the political process and what's happening, or if it's something that I'll be able to, you know, is that time gone, or is it something that I can kind of salvage? And so I was thinking about this today in the wake of reading the Daily Stoic this morning, and it was finding lots of these super weird coincidences, or maybe they're not necessarily coincidences, maybe my brain is making connections after I've been given all the facts, you know, maybe I'm writing the story after I've already seen the movie here, but, so this morning's entry, which I read again when I woke up, and so yeah, let me get the book. This morning's entry was really interesting. Stupid thing. It was interesting because it was about exactly what I've been talking about. It was about passion, and it was also not just about passion, but it was about the passion of others, how the passion of others relates to the way that you express your passion or the way that you choose not to express your passion that way. And I found it to be very, like I said, coincidental, but then again, I don't necessarily believe in coincidences, so maybe this was supposed to happen, maybe this was a pattern that's just repeating itself once again, but it was very curious to me that this entry should come up on the day when I find myself wrestling with the problem or struggling with the actual nature of our political atmosphere in this country. So today's entry, like I said, was about the virtues of indifference versus passion. And again, February 27th, this is going to be the last entry for the month of February in the Daily Stoic that we will hear. The title for February 27th, month of February, is Passions and Emotions, Cultivating Indifference Where Others Grow Passion. And so the quote associated with this entry, which is on page 67, two numbers away, so close.
The quote is from Epictetus's Discourses, second chapter, 19th paragraph, lines 12 and 13. Of all the things that are, some are good, others bad, and yet others indifferent. The good are virtues, and all that share in them. The bad are the vices, and all that indulge them. The indifferent lie in between virtue and vice, and include wealth, health, life, death, pleasure, and pain. And so that's the quote. And then Holliday and Hanselman go on a little further here, and they say, imagine the power you'd have in your life and relationships if all the things that trouble everyone else, how thin they are, how much money they have, how long they have left to live, how they will die, didn't matter so much. What if, where others were upset, envious, excited, possessive, or greedy, you were objective, calm, and clear-headed? Can you envision that? Imagine what it would do for your relationships at work, or for your love life, or for your friendships. Seneca was an incredibly wealthy, even famous man, yet he was a Stoic. He had many material things, yet, as the Stoics say, he was also indifferent to them. He enjoyed them while they were there, but he accepted that they might someday disappear. What a better attitude than desperately craving more or fearfully dreading losing even one penny. Indifference is a solid middle ground. It's not about avoidance or shunning, but rather not giving any possible outcome more power or preference than is appropriate. This is not easy to do, certainly, but if you could manage, how much more relaxed would you be? And so there's a couple different pieces in there that that I found to be very important, and a couple different pieces that I thought about at different times during the day. And so the first piece that I thought about, obviously, was, well, maybe not obviously to me, because it was the first thing that I read, but the difference between good, bad, and indifference. You have the good things, you know, which, you know, to be trustworthy, to be courageous, to be reliable, and virtuous things that bring benefits to others when you demonstrate them. You've got the bad things, which are the vices, you know, you're greedy, you're a trickster, you're, you know, a scumbag, and you perpetrate those on others, you're a bad person. And then you've got the indifferent things, and they list things like wealth and health, life and death, pleasure and pain. None of these things are necessarily good or bad things. But, well, they're not good or bad things until you kind of apply an emotion or apply an attitude towards those things. If you don't apply an emotion or an attitude towards those things, they just tend to exist. If you're not constantly worried about how healthy you are and you're not panicking at the slightest cough, then more likely than not, you're not even going to notice that you have a cough, and you're going to be able to remain indifferent. You're not hyper aware of those tiny little subtle changes in your body that everyone experiences. You're not going to place too much importance on that tiny cough, which means you're not going to be worried all the time. Same thing goes with wealth. You know, obviously money's important. We all need money to live. But when money's your only focus, and that's the only thing that you're really concerned about, is getting more money and hoarding your money, no matter how much you have, you're not going to be happy. On the other side of the coin, if you aren't concerned about money at all, you just throw it around like it's nothing, and you don't even try to go out and earn any to support yourself, then sooner or later you don't have it, and that's just as bad of a thing as having too much and not really caring about other people. Life and death, I think we all kind of know where I stand on that. Those are both kind of just fleeting and momentary states in our human existence. Pleasure and pain are much like the same. Pleasure and pain are only necessarily good or bad things when we place too much importance on them. And so, looking at this from the lens of how much importance you're actually placing on things, and allowing, you know, your passion to be tempered, and maybe even intentionally tempering your passion in some cases where others aren't capable. And this was the second part the conclusion that I came to today was, I mean, this is one of my favorite practices in general, is
and maybe this is a healthy thing, maybe it's not a healthy thing, but it certainly keeps me relaxed and certainly keeps me calm in the face of pressure, is internalizing that pressure and not displaying it outwards. Because when you exude that indifference to pressure and adverse circumstances, others seem to gain confidence from that. And what could be better than instilling confidence in others by simply walking and existing and breathing and speaking? There's not many things better than that, and I think that kind of is one of the traits of a good leader and a confident leader. But I digress. My whole point here was that it was a check for myself, because I realized that as I was allowing myself to be frustrated more and more and more about all the bullshit that I was seeing on TV, and this senator's yelling for no reason, and they're, oh, why are they allowing, you know, why are the Democrats allowing the Republicans to hijack this, and oh, why are the Republicans now letting the Democrats do that, and blah, blah, blah. The more that you worry about that kind of shit as opposed to what's going on in your world, what you're actually allowing yourself to do is let your passion take over. Now, the events that are occurring outside you and the stuff that you see scrolling on the bottom of the screen for Fox News and CNN doesn't necessarily affect you. It's outside your sphere of control and your sphere of influence, so it's really something that should not have any bearing on your life immediately, at least not in the daily or the minute by minute or the second by second sense. However, When that stuff starts to control you, and you start to let that stuff control you by placing an attitude or a feeling on that, something as simple as little pixels scrolling across the screen, I think that is the root of many a person's frustration and unhappiness, is their willingness to let their passion grow until they can no longer control it about things that don't necessarily have a passionate connotation without a human assigning it. And so, like I said, that was a bit of a reality check for me today, was to recognize that, why the hell are you getting so frustrated over stuff that doesn't necessarily even matter? It was also a bit of a reality check for me to stop feeling so much quote-unquote existential dread, as they say, about not being so involved in the political process, or not being as involved and as engaged and as satisfied by involvement in that process and that realm of existence as I was 2 to 3 years ago. Because much the same way that Seneca was not necessarily concerned about losing his wealth, but did try as much as he could without necessarily breaking a sweat to keep it, he knew that if his wealth were to go out the door, so be it. It was only a temporary state anyway, and I enjoyed it while I was experiencing it. I enjoyed being famous while I was famous. I enjoyed being alive while I was alive. Such is life. All good things must come to an end in order for other good things to begin. And so for me, that was a bit of a happy moment today, recognizing that I don't necessarily need to be as involved with things that I was 2 to 3 years ago, because I'm not the same person that I was 2 to 3 years ago, and I don't derive happiness from the same things that I do 2 to 3 years ago, especially not things that I have no control over. And so with that, I will end my non-political episode that all I did was talk about politics and philosophy, and I will see you next week. Everybody have a good night.
don't matter.